HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Okay, so today I am joined by Michael Howard and Sandra Walker from Frontier Software. Guys, you're very welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
Morning. Thank you for having us.
No, it's great to have you. Sandra and Michael are going to talk to me about primarily choosing a HR system or a human capital management system. Guys, do you want to just introduce yourselves and tell everybody what Frontier Software do?
Certainly. My name is Michael Howard. As Declan has said, I'm the founder of Frontier Software, founded in 1983 in Melbourne, moved to the UK, back to the UK to start the company in 1991. And so consequently, we are a long established company. Primarily, we produce excellent software and we also perform payroll services for organizations. We have offices around the world and we currently have our payroll tax engine in 26 different countries. That's what we primarily do, two aspects. And Sandra and I will talk about that in depth, exactly what the HCM component consists of as we get into the questions. Sandra, do you want to add any more there?
Yeah, just a little bit of a background to where I'm at in Frontier Software. I've been working in HR and payroll software market for over 30 years now. I primarily performed business development, marketing, sales support roles, but my primary role since joining Frontier Software has been to respond to invitations to tenders, requests for proposals and such forth, which puts me in a position to understand the changing needs of people. You know, what everybody was wanting 5 or 10 years ago isn't what they're looking for now. So bid management is more than enough to keep me quiet. I take the whole process from identifying opportunities right through to a proposal going out of the door. So I interact with all areas of the business, with development, with the business development guys, with quality assurance, just to make sure that the solution that we're putting out of the door for people is the best one for their needs. Alongside that, I flex my writing muscles a little bit with supporting the sales and marketing collateral, writing mailers, copy for magazine articles and such forth. But first and foremost, responses to tenders and understanding what our prospects and clients are looking for. So that's a little bit about me.
Super. Thanks, Sandra. Okay, let's get into it. Let's get into the nitty gritty. When I was thinking about chatting to you guys, I presumed, but maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm right, that the two main reasons that people would be considering what HR system or what HCM system they may use would be they either have one they're not happy with, or they've reached a size where suddenly they feel they need one. Would that be fair? And what are the different sort of criteria you see in those two cohorts?
It is true, Declan, and I would add a couple of others to that, is that companies have come to the end of their contract with existing suppliers. And so that has forced a change upon them, because if they're in the government circle, then they have to go to tender traditionally, 5-year contract, 8-year contract. We don't really want to, but we've got to. So that's a driver for change. Another one is a different strategic direction that the company's been forced to take, possibly because of a parent company now owning them. So that's a crucial one. That has occurred many times. And we, unfortunately, like all other software companies, they love our software, but they've been forced to change and go to company XYZ because the big parent is using XYZ. And we've recently just had that in Singapore, actually, which was really unfortunate. A client was happy with using a couple of our modules for 14 years. And they had to switch. And in that instance, the HR payroll department did not even know that there was a switch coming. Anyway, that's a good example, isn't it, Sandra? And
yes.
I'm sure that you've seen that, and you've got a couple of more examples that fall into that environment.
Yes, I decked and hit the nail on the head there with business growth. I think if somebody's looking for their first HR system, and there are still people out there going to market for their first HR system, lots of companies are on their fourth, fifth, sixth iteration of software. But what tends to drive people to market first and foremost for their first system is growth. they're perhaps keeping records in spreadsheets, Word documents. They've got no means of outputting their data. So they've got information there, but it's not joined up. They don't know how to report on it. And basically the company has perhaps been very successful in their market. They've had a boom of staff growth and they've got to get these records electronic. For people wanting to change off of the system that they have, Michael said, you know, a lot of the time it is driven by a corporate decision, a strategy, where the company, what direction they're going in, what technology they want to use, what platform they want to be on. So it is driven by that. But I would say coming out of tenders, when people go back to market to replace what they have, frustrations. They're frustrated. They're frustrated at the limited functionality in what they have, the lack of meaningful data, the ability to output it efficiently, effectively, quickly, on demand. They perhaps don't have integration with other business systems, so they're duplicating effort. They're paying multiple licenses for different software, where if they bring it all under one roof, they're dealing with perhaps one company for all of their HR systems, one license fee, one cost. So it's really those frustrations surrounding the data that they're holding. They can't get at it. If they've got an existing system and they can't change it themselves, they can't configure it, so that they're left with the cost of getting a supplier in to make a simple change to their database. So for me, what comes off the page in a tender primarily is frustration that what they want to do with their system, what they've got at the moment, can't do it. They're not moving forward. They're not keeping a pace with technology. So I would say that they're real drivers for change when people come back out to the market.
I would add one more when you've been talking, Sandra, and the fact that if you're an existing user of software, the IT department and the company says, we do not want to host software anymore. We want to take it as a service, which we'll talk about later, I'm sure. So that is a driver for change. We've seen that, where they just don't want software anymore because they don't have the expertise. They just don't have computing departments or IT departments, and indeed they may have to pay for IT services. So they're all important aspects on a decision to say, hey, let's have a look. Or they may have even changed a finance system. And therefore the aspects of efficiency comes into it and say, well, you know, in that payroll system that we've got doesn't interface to our new enterprise ERP finance system. So there are many, but they're the highlighted ones.
Definitely. So integration, a key consideration there. We'll get to that in 1 second. Just one very quick question, and this is going to be a how long is a piece of string type question. But in terms of typically when you see organizations who don't have that, who maybe were in that spreadsheet Word document phase as they grow, is there any rule of thumb that you guys would even anecdotally witness as to, you know, we get to X size and people need to formalize this, or is that just too broad stroke?
Not really. Typically our organization size that come to us, Sandra, correct me if I'm wrong, is typically across the world for those employee sites, for those companies which have more than 200 plus people.
Yes, I was the figure that popped into my head was 100. There are companies with 50 or 60 people that you would talk to that are looking for an HR system. What happens there is you've got what they would like versus what they have available to as a budget to support their dreams and their wish list. But I think 100 up, people do start looking. That there's a lot out there in the market for them to choose from, and sometimes it will just be as simple as a budget constraint. What people tend to do is perhaps at a first pass put out a wish list, and I would always caution against that. Because from a provider point of view, when you're looking at a wish list, you can see the items that are things that are perhaps a step too far. Your HR system's not going to be able to deliver that for you. So I would, a user requirements document, putting that out there, what you really genuinely need to move forward with a project to implement a system. This is primarily on a first pass, somebody going to the market for the first time. When they've been using a system, they know what they didn't like about that system and they know what they liked about it. And that defines their requirement specification. You know, this is ours as is, this is where we want to be, and this is the big gap with what we've got. But for the first time going to market, we would like an HR system. Look at what you're trying to achieve, you know, what you really do want from this system, how it's going to help you in your business and to move you forward. But try and steer clear of everybody in the business chucking into the pot what they would like from this system, because that's not going to get you where you want to be very quickly.
That's the famous feature creep, isn't it?
Is it ever?
Declan, I'll never forget, because again, Sandra said that we've both got great experience on completing tenders over the years. I've done hundreds, Sandra's done more. I'll never forget one particular tender. The company will be absolutely nameless in the UK. I can tell you how many questions there were in this tender, Declan. 971.
It. Oh, God.
971. Now, for the listeners listening to this podcast, I really have sort of three or four words. What is the benefit? What is the business benefit? What are you really wanting? There's got to be a key driver, and that could be top 10. And anyway, so that's from our personal experience on that particular topic and that question, Declan.
Yeah. Perfect segue, though. What are those core components that most companies are looking for? What are the basic components that everyone should have in their system?
Well, I couldn't speak this morning, my time, that is, because I'm not in the UK, speaking from the UK. There was a tender that I did. I certainly don't do tenders now. But the question of this particular organization, and it wasn't in this country, their driver is an integrated HR and payroll system. That's their key driver. Now, someone else doesn't want payroll because they want the key driver are the HR modules. Mm. Now, HR modules for some companies, they don't want the recruitment system because they're not recruiting, but they desperately need a performance management system because it's lacking in their current system. Yep. So they may well be, in order to do performance management, obviously you've got to have a core HR, you've got to have the organization establishment embedded into the database. So the key ones, we as an organization have about 19-20 different modules covering the whole spectrum of HCM, but they're not necessarily the core. For example, employee surveys, that's not the core.
Yeah.
It occurs, and you'd agree with that, Sandra, I know you would, because we've spoken at that in length. A big driver is, regardless of the modules that you want, you've got to have the ability of having an easy to use reporting tool. It doesn't matter what you're going to buy, but if you haven't got that, and if you buy something where it requires technical people to extract data, then in my opinion, you failed in the exercise. Yeah. And the key components could well be recruitment. It could well be, if you're looking for a global HR solution, then you've got to have the ability of having globalization in your product, not just based on the UK, but the UK, as we know, covers Isle of Man, Jersey, Guernsey, and the UK. So if you're looking for an integrated HRIS, HCM plus payroll, you've got to make sure that that vendor can carry those tax jurisdictions. Yeah. And maybe you want to throw Ireland into it. And indeed, maybe you want to talk about Wales and have it in Welsh. So it's quite difficult, but if you're looking at the pure answer, it does depend upon the company. Sandra, sure. Maybe you want to add your experience to that.
I think for me, core components that people are looking for, integration, I think, which just harps back to what I've said previously, their reporting capability, that is now so cool. It's a question of not what you're holding, it's how you're able to output that formats that you're able to output it, the way you can drill down into the finer detail of the data, the format that you can display it for the different users in the business. Different managers want to see data in different formats. So it's how you're holding that data, where you're holding it, and how you put it out again. And connectivity. A core thing is to look at connectivity with other line of business systems. So is there an API, some way of talking, putting data backwards and forwards between, you know, other line of business systems? So for me, yes, Michael's touched very much on the fact that there's a whole suite of modules out there across all companies, you know, that providers that people can choose from. But HR and or payroll tend to be the number one that people are looking for. But now more than ever before, the talent management piece, the recruitment, the onboarding, the learning and development, the performance management, the succession planning, all of those aspects are real of real importance now, more than I've ever seen it before. You know, historically, HR and payroll were what people were looking for. And then that moved on to being able to hold some recruitment records and some training records and perhaps an appraisal record. But it's so much more than that now. Yeah. So there's lots of elements to consider, but also consider the company that you're dealing with, you know, the length of time in market, the product suite, how they will handle
your supplier, Sandra, sorry, do you mean the person supplying the software?
Sorry,
you mean consider the supplier of the
the provider, software. Consider the provider, consider the sort of relationship that you're going to have with them, what sort of value they're going to add to your business, how they implement. Do they provide, do they use subcontractors? Do they hold your hand throughout the whole process? Are they there when, are they going to be there when you need them? There's so much more beyond saying, I like the look of that piece of software. Yeah. There's so much more to consider than that. Yeah. A lot of the time, a decision is can be made on how much the end users like what they're seeing, but it needs to go so much more beyond that when you're making a decision to buy or change.
That is very, very true, because of obviously, when you've been in the market, it's no different from the car industry. You like Ford or you like Vauxhall. You've made a decision before you even get into the Vauxhall showroom. And I'm only just using those two parallels because everyone knows Ford and Vauxhall in the UK. So you really sort of made up your mind in a way, but, well, I really want to do some cross-country driving in the forest because I really want to get into rallying. So that's a functional aspect that you've got to consider. So the functions of the product, and I'm looking for an integrated time and attendance system which outputs expenses through the payroll or into accounts receivable. And I definitely want a totally integrated and interface creation of the debits and credits to go into SAP, just using that as an example, of course. It doesn't matter. So there are extreme, depending upon the company.
Yeah, no, really.
And the expertise that the organization has.
Yeah, no, really good point. Look, we could talk on any one of those things in
terms
of what they could for the rest of the day. And it's clear to me that we are going to need a follow-up podcast on this. But just if we just keep a top level for now, you touched on it earlier, Michael, around you know, software as a service style things. In terms of deployment, what are the key considerations for people? You know, on-site is probably nearly gone unless you're a huge organization, and even more so in COVID times. What's the current thinking or the current best practice in your own opinion?
Declan, I'm glad you said it in your own opinion, because it is a personal decision. And how long have you got? 24 hours to talk, or 12 hours?
Maybe closer to 12 minutes, but...
Because it comes back to, and this is really a key consideration. First of all, it's going to restrict the software vendors that you can go with, because many of them now, particularly USA-centric, and I'm not being derogatory, I'm just being factual, they all offer SaaS-type products. And SaaS, for those people who are listening and don't know what that means, I didn't invent the term. Mark Benioff of Salesforce invented that. SaaS means software as a service. which means that instead of purchasing by a license fee with annual maintenance, typically you would be paying a subscription to use the software. And typically the database, by definition, is going to be held in a server outside the organization, as opposed to, I do not want my database stored in an outside server. I want it in our corporate IT center. That's a term on site, and there's lots of different terms banded around. Now, the decision as to go which way you want is really driven by the organization, typically, and that wouldn't be by the HR manager. It typically would be by IT on that strategy. However, the HR manager says, look, I can just go and buy some HR software, put it in the cloud, and I don't have to go through capital expenditure. I don't have to seek approval. I can just pay a monthly fee, and bingo, I've got my great HRIS HCM software without having to go through the rigmarole of approvals. So that has changed in the market. That's great for a user's point of view because they get a system. And of course, then it comes back to the aspects of outsourcing. Now, typically in our environment, and I'll speak from Frontier Software, outsourcing to us means outsourcing your payroll to us, for example. We compete, and this is not a sales pitch, I'm just giving it a fact. We compete with other people in the marketplace. As I always said, I've been in IT for a long time, and the people always say, well, IBM, everyone knows what IBM used to do, but they don't know what they do now because they're not the same. But everyone knows that I get a payroll and I get money in the bank every month, every week, every fortnight, whatever it may be. Now, of course, a company decision may well be, I don't want to do this in-house, which traditionally is a great way of doing it. What your decision criteria is mixed. And it all comes down to, have we done it before? Have we been outsourced before? Do we have people to process in-house? No, we don't outsource it. That's a criteria. Then money comes into it. Well, that's a lot of money. We're paying all that every month. Well, obviously an organization considers that in its tender aspects. And Sandra, again, has completed many, many where an organization starts off and say, well, we want to go outsource. Then they change their mind and say, well, give us a quote for in-house. Oh, no, let's change their mind. So luckily, we can do all three. Over to you, Sandra. Otherwise, I could talk all day.
I think to summarize all of that, if people are deciding on their deployment, I think it's their attitude to risk. It's their attitude to how much responsibility do they want to have, particularly if we're talking payroll, very, very sensitive data, HR and payroll, very sensitive data, what their attitude to risk is, how they want that data to be used, where they want it to be held. So I think the decision on deployment is based on strategy, corporate strategy. You know, if the company is deciding that everything is going in the cloud and there's going to be no exceptions, then that's where it goes. Attitude to risk, budget, do they want the cost of staff in-house? Do they want the cost of setting up and maintaining infrastructure? Because that's another consideration. Do they want the cost of staying compliant? So again, there's those sorts of factors. Where do we see us investing our people and our budgets, our money? Is that going to be on infrastructure? Is that going to be on software? Is that going to be on training people, staying compliant? So I think number one, it's that attitude to how much of this do we want to do ourselves? Do we want to be responsible for business continuity, disaster recovery? Sure. But the choice is there, but I think it comes down to corporate strategy and attitude to risk.
Sure. Does the question of where the server that is holding the data come up frequently in terms of GDPR and EU, et cetera, et cetera?
Yes, absolutely. That sort of taking us right back to the outset of our conversation, what makes people decide to buy a system in the first place? GDPR was right up there. People realised that they just were not compliant and they had no means of being compliant. But yes, bringing back to your question there, where the server is located, absolutely, yes. Okay.
Excellent. I'm conscious of time, and I'm also conscious that we have only scratched the surface on virtually every single one of these. So I'd be absolutely delighted if you guys I'm putting you on the spot now, but maybe we could organize some follow-ups and deep dive into some of these individual components. I think it would really add value to our listeners. Very quickly then, two things. One, anything really innovative that you guys are keeping an eye on, that, you know, any sort of game-changing technologies or any emerging trends within this sector?
From a our company point of view at this point in time, we are always looking at automating a process. And that may well be of an we have an integrated workflow to step through. Now, to give you an example of that, Declan, and again, we can talk a long time, an organization, XYZ, they looked at their workflows and they had 5,000 workflows. 5,000, all connected with HR. Now, there's efficiencies to be gained. So within that type of approach from a workflow automation, let alone whether it be predictive analytics, which we are not doing at this point in time, analytics, of course, but that's innovative to some companies and others it's not. Certainly the use of the typical word, and I hate the word myself, artificial intelligence, AI, robotic engineering, et cetera, it has its place within all types of software. And we certainly are looking at those aspects to the best use of technology to drive business efficiency. If it doesn't drive it to business efficiency, we're not interested.
Sure. Okay.
It's really as simple as that.
Yeah, no,
it's and even to the extent of e-learning to a lot of people, e-learning is business efficiency because it means I can sit down the pub, I'm bored at the pub, when they open, I'm dying for a beer down at the pub, but I'll take my smartphone with me and do the Frontier Software learning of how to take on an onboarding an applicant.
Yeah,
I don't need to be fixed anymore. Those days have gone. So that is innovative for many, many organizations, let alone the tracking of the employee's performance in a different method as opposed to the traditional way of measuring a person's performance. Lots of avenues for innovation there.
I would just add briefly to that that, you know, as a business, we are looking at technology and customer requirements and where the market is going and these famous wish lists. We're looking at that in terms of where we're going with product. But I think we can't close without mentioning the events of the last 12 months. And I think that changed a lot of the attitude across HR. And I think that is where it will be driving us in the next 12 to 18 months and probably even further in terms of supporting flexible working, supporting the employee at home, supporting their work-life balance. I think employee well-being is right at the top of the agenda now. Employee engagement, whilst everybody is remote, I think any tools that we as HR software providers can deliver that support the remote working function, that support keeping an eye on the well-being of employees, making sure that they are engaged with their role, that they're skilled for their role, that they are committed to what they're doing, that they feel valued. And I think if you are recording that data, if you're able to have them putting in how they're feeling on a daily basis to their HR system, in touch with their own data by their mobile phone, however they're doing that, I think anything that supports where we're at in terms of people being at home, feeling isolated, feeling remote, I think that will drive where HR systems are going. It may have changed course for us as providers and you know, buyers where we thought it was going, but I think that really will be a priority for quite some time to come.
And a good priority for organizations.
Absolutely.
So, that's good to hear. Yeah. Guys, really appreciate your time today. Loads of knowledge seeping out of you guys around the industry. So I'm delighted you shared it with us. If any of our listeners would like to get in contact, maybe have a chat about their own systems or where they're going, how can they contact or what's the best way to contact you guys?
The best way is two email addresses. You could email us directly. Sandra, ladies first.
I'd say visit our website or sandra.walker@frontiersoftware.com or find me on LinkedIn. I'm happy to take any questions, particularly around the we're new to this, we're looking to buy our first system help, more than happy to engage with people through LinkedIn or email. No problem at all. I look forward to receiving that.
And indeed, to round that off, if anyone would like to contact myself directly, michael.howard@frontiersoftware.com.
Fantastic.
So please do not hesitate. We've been in business since 1983. We're not an immature organization. So consequently, we are here to help the user wherever they may be. And if anyone's listening and they feel that they're going to ask a dumb question, don't worry about it. Not
no
a problem.
Such thing. No such thing as a dumb question. No. I don't know.
Well, I hope I didn't prove that taught wrong today. But no, listen, guys, thank you so much for taking part today. And the best of luck for the business in the coming year.
Okay. Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much. Okay, bye-bye.
Cheers,
bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.